I'm Bree Benfell, actress, model, and founder of Bree Fit and a mother to a baby girl, Theodora.
And I'm Sharon Wong, founder and CEO of Mother's Work and a mother to three young adults, Alexandra, Nicola, and Timothy. We're very excited to share with you our podcast, The Making of Motherhood, coming live from Singapore.
We are two mummies wanting to share the dirty truth about motherhood, honest, hilarious truth of being a mummy. We cry, we laugh, and we break down, and wouldn't have it any other way. So grab that coffee, tea, or glass of wine with no guilt, and come listen to the Making of Motherhood podcast,
where we talk to celebrity mums, guest mums and dads, and experts for the best tips and advice.
Giggle with us as we talk about the things no one else will. Listen to the Making of Motherhood on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Time for mum hacks. I feel like soon we're going to need a jingle, Sharon, for these mum hacks. I hope they get popular because I'm living for these mum hacks.
I know.
I'm going to share mine first. Again, it's a product and it's the breastfeeding pillow. I have the Cambras, is that how you say it?
Yes.
Beautiful pillow. I used it for a little bit.
During your breastfeeding journey, right?
Absolutely. I'm still breastfeeding, but now I feel like I can do that anywhere.
She doesn't need to lift yet.
Exactly. So I was going to get rid of this pillow, thinking, oh, I don't need it anymore, until somebody was like, she can sit in the middle when she's learning how to sit, and if she falls, she's going to be safe.
So she can lean on it.
Yes.
Yeah. And the bigger nursing pillows, actually, it becomes like a donut for them, you know?
Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So don't ever get rid of your breastfeeding pillows and keep it. And that's where it's literally in her playpen, and she sits there, and I know that if she falls, she's not gonna hurt her head. It is perfect.
That's a great product.
Okay, let's go on to your Sharon.
My mum hack. Today I would like to share about, I guess kids always get into trouble and they fight or at school or whether it's at the playground. And I think one of the biggest grief I have growing up is that if something happens, my parents would always, the first thing they'll be, they look at me like, what did you do wrong? And I was very conscientious not to do that with my kids. So my mum hack would be that whatever it is, always ask your child for their side of the story. Then decide whether they're wrong. If they're wrong, then you know, we can tell them they're wrong. And if they're right, so that they know that we always have their back, rather than just jump into conclusion and said, you know, what did you do wrong? I hated that growing up. I always, you know, have that problem.
I had the same thing. I mean,
is that right?
Yeah, and my mum's totally gonna listen and be like, oh, Brienne. But she 100, that is my biggest pet peeve about my mum, and she
too.
Still does it.
Mine, both parents. I think it's an Asian parenting. I didn't realize it, you know? Yeah. It's interesting that you're saying this, because I know that growing up, for my generation at least, you know, we're always in trouble because we didn't even do anything wrong, and we, you know, automatically like, what did you do wrong? Why automatically?
Yeah, I knew if I ever said anything to my mom, she'd always be like, well, how do you think the other person? It would always be that person was in the right, I was in the wrong. And if I went to my dad, he would just be like, I understand, yeah, that must be a crap feeling. Or he was always on my side. Yeah. So I'm like, thanks, Dad.
At least you got somebody on your
side. At least I had someone. But that is, my mom already knows. Biggest pet peeve, so I'm glad, because I'm gonna try not to do that with Thea, even though I probably will end up being just like my mum.
Because it's hard. I think sometimes you don't think about it, you know, and then it just happens. So there are certain things I guess we grow up with, and then you want to make sure it doesn't happen. Yeah, that's my mum hack.
That is a good one.
Joining us today is specialist gynecologist and obstetrician, Dr. Anne Tan, from the Women's Fertility and Fetal Center here in Singapore. Dr. Anne has been caring for women at all stages for over 20 years. Hello, Dr. Anne. You've been around for as long as Mother's Work has been around. We've been around for 22 years, and you've been caring for women for 20 years.
And you have been providing for them for all this time, too.
Oh, and then I can't join
in. Hi, Bree.
Okay. Lovely to meet you. That's so part of the process. Yes.
Okay, so we are so excited that you are here with us, and I know that you're going to help so many of our listeners.
Before we get into preparing to get pregnant, I think one of the things we'd like to know is you are one of few Singaporean OBGYN trained in both fetal medicine and reproductive medicine. To me, those are such big words. What does it mean, right, Bree?
Well, please tell us.
Well, simply put, fetal medicine is looking, helping the baby from the time of conception right to the time of birth. And obviously, we're looking at the fetus, right? So the fetus is small, it's growing, we want to learn how to protect it, how we can identify problems that might be going on in the pregnancy so that we can actually identify to the parents should there be any potential problems, or look at the mom's situation, does she have medical problems, how can we control it, optimize it so the baby can be safer. Take for example twins. So we all know twins have a higher risk of having premature birth, so we want to try and make sure also that premature birth doesn't come too prematurely. So there are various steps that will take along the way. Okay, so now flip over to reproductive medicine. Reproductive medicine is where we help the parents conceive their much wanted baby, and of course that basically help them through the journey of trying to conceive, which is what we're going to talk about later. And when once they conceive, then happily pass on to the other part where they'll be happily looked after by the OBGYN. Fetal medicine specialists come in only particularly when there are potential issues for high-risk women in particular. So fetal medicine is for when you have potential issues, you want more specific tests, like perhaps you need an amniocentesis, you want genetic testing done, and you need some explanations. Perhaps we could help you along and guide you along that area, or you have had previous preterm births where your cervix might have opened earlier. We will be the ones looking after you perhaps so that we can fine-tune your management a little bit more.
Wow. You're the best of both worlds. So let's talk about preparing to get pregnant. I know a lot of women who've had an extremely tough journey getting pregnant, from miscarriages to ectopic pregnancies and to failed IVF, not just once, but several times. So when people are ready to go forward and get pregnant, should they have a checkup straight away?
Well, I think the answer is look at yourself, how urgent are your needs? That would mean how old you are, how old your partner is, and how long you've actually been having unprotected intercourse. If you've actually been having unprotected intercourse anyway, then and looking back and say you've been having fun for the last 1 or 2 years without ever thinking about conceiving and nothing has happened, and now you suddenly think, okay, maybe you should put more concerted effort, then perhaps you want to check out earlier. So I think if you're in that position, then trying means we need to know whether your cycles are regular. Are you actually ovulating? That means are you actually releasing eggs every month so that there's something to catch for the sperm? And then you have to make sure that the sperms are able to swim their little marathon to catch the egg. So those are simple tests that we would do to assess your fertility. Now, not everybody who has regular menses actually ovulates every month. So that's why we need to check. And I have many, many women who come up to me and show me the app. And see, I have regular periods. Then you actually scroll down and check. But the cycles are not particularly regular. Sometimes they're 3 weeks to 5 weeks and then everything's, oh, but I thought every month. I said, yeah, they come every month, but they come like 1 to 2 weeks off a certain date. Now, ovulation occurs on a certain day and the egg only survives for 24 hours. So you actually need a lot of little sperm waiting for the princess egg to appear. So if you don't, you're unprepared for that, then you're not going to catch the timing right. So I think when we actually screen women, then they realize, oh, there are actually, it's not so easy to conceive. And couples who are fertile, even the best timing, there's no 100% on that cycle. It's something like 25% per cycle.
So even if your eggs are healthy, the sperms are healthy and strong little swimmers, there's only 25%.
Yeah, that doesn't mean they'll meet.
It's amazing.
And we just...
Everybody thinks it's so easy, right?
No, so and I took it for granted. I have 3 children, thank goodness. I'm very lucky, I guess. And Bree, did you even know you were pregnant?
I actually did have the app that you were talking about. Yeah. So I knew that my period was very much... Honestly, on the date.
Yeah,
so
that's good.
When I said to Matt on October 13th, and today's the day.
All right, that's good.
And thankfully, that 25% we now have Thea. So
yeah, that's right.
Very
so it's
for that.
It works for women who are very accurate, and not for those who have a shifting cycle, because not everybody knows it's it's shifting until they look back, oh, actually it's shifting.
Right.
And also you must realize what your health is like. So that's the other part of it. Not just the cycles, but look at your lifestyle. Are you eating well? Is your health good? And also finally look at your age and see where you are. So if you're at 35, well, and above, then you might want to get screened earlier just to make sure, do all the boxes check out. Am I ovulating right? Is my egg bank correct? And we'll go into that later. And is his little swimmers good? So if all those check out well, then okay, we can hopefully help you time your trying, etc. So maybe we'll cover that in a bit more.
Right. No, but so what is the age where, I know there's probably not a right or wrong answer, I don't know scientifically, is there an age where our eggs start to reduce?
Yes.
I mean, so assuming you're like women with the normal number of egg banks, what is that age when we start to reduce? So
actually you start reducing the minute you're born, unfortunately. Oh. So once you
what?
You start with about a million eggs, and by the time you're 20s it's only a few hundred thousand, and by the time it starts going down. So every month on every cycle you don't just lose one egg, you actually lose a few.
No, I know.
Yeah,
that,
so
but
you would
when
want
I
to
get
precipitously lower past 40 is definitely
40.
So somewhere between 35 and 40 the decline can be quite steep, and it varies for every single woman. So it's very hard for me to tell you who's going to drop, because it's a personalized number.
Yeah. So 35 to 40, we talked about this briefly between us. 35 to 40, so women these days don't get married that young, right? So, you know, we talked about freezing our eggs. I know that in Singapore, we're not allowed to do that. So I have a lot of female friends, single, at 33, 34, and not in a relationship. And they thought, well, I better go freeze my eggs just in case by the time I do get into a relationship and get married, my eggs might not be healthy anymore, or you know, whatever the situation is. But you know, we're not allowed to freeze our eggs in Singapore
under the
Ministry of Health regulation right now in Singapore.
Yeah, we hope that will change, because we are hoping that more women will be given the opportunity to save their fertility for later. And actually, I think it should work for men too.
Yeah. I want to talk about men.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, so that brings us maybe to the... Brie, do you have anything else for trying to get pregnant, preparing to get pregnant for Dr. Anne before I ask my second question?
No, you go. You ask.
Yeah, so what happens if we find out that we have fertility issues? What are the next steps?
Well, it depends on what fertility issues are. So it could be female on our side, or it could be on the partner's side, which is the guy's side. So on the women's side, the most common reasons are not enough eggs or too many eggs. So if you have when you have fewer eggs, then you have a lower reserve. When you have a lower reserve, there's also lesser good eggs. All right, we have too many eggs, like in polycystic ovarian syndrome, then you may not be ovulating regularly. So again, we have to approach the problem differently. Yeah, but in the basic approach would always be to optimize health first. Because I can tell you, most women think prenatal supplements are meant only when you're pregnant. It says prenatal because it actually meant pre-pregnancy. So you should
pre-pregnancy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So you should actually take a prenatal supplement to prepare for the good of the egg. Because seed eggs take 3 months to form from cell to egg. So if you want to impact the quality of the eggs, you need to start before you're pregnant. Because the minute you know you're pregnant, it's already set. You can't change anything anymore. It's already done. Sorry.
Okay, well, I definitely did that wrong then, didn't I? I was not taking that.
But it was the sperm too. It also takes 3 months from cell to sperm. So if you want to impact your health of your egg or sperm, you need to start taking the prenatal supplements before. And so for couples to think, okay, maybe we'll start trying down the road.
Right.
It wouldn't be a bad idea just to start taking the basic prenatals and perhaps do some lifestyle modifications to enhance your egg and sperm health. So that if something happens, it's great.
With that, would you say, so maybe being overweight and things like that, that is a big issue? Or do you just wait until it's case by case? I don't know, does that affect it or not really?
If one is excessively overweight, it will definitely impact your hormones. And you might have a hormone problem. Could be your thyroid that's a bit slow, that's why you're overweight. So there are various things that we want to check out for you. And a lot of women here are even vitamin D deficient, or they're iron deficient, because They think eating red meat is bad for their health. Going out in the sun is not a good thing. So we do have some issues here. And vitamin D is really important for ovulation as well. So I think we do need to look at what we eat and do.
Wow.
And that can start from when, I don't know, you're young.
Yes,
you should
yes.
always be.
Yeah. I mean, it's a process of life. So we look at how to stay healthy.
Right.
It's just a no-brainer. Just keep going, right? Because
yeah.
you don't want to be iron and vitamin D deficient the rest of your life, too. You might have brain fog. You might lose some more hair.
I have a brain fog.
So after all that, and we have problems. So what are the next steps? IVF, IUI, what do we need to do?
Okay, so if this ovulation is good, and it's maybe a mild male factor where the sperms are not swimming as well, then we could help the sperms in. So I always tell them it's like breaking down the marathon into a sprint. We help the little sperms concentrate, and we put them up right into the uterus with a very, very fine tube. There's no pain in that procedure because there's no needles. And we drop the sperm at the top of the uterus, so they have to do a short sprint up the tubes. And we time it so that we
and you're
time
watching
the,
that.
Yes, we're timing. Yeah, we time it and we watch that we make sure that the sperm are deposited at the top of the uterus.
Wow.
So that will hopefully give a better chance. However, the chances depends on the quality of the sperm and ultimately.
Which you check before.
Yes.
And then you say, okay, your sperm isn't.
Yeah, so we
the
know.
Best, or it's amazing. I don't know.
Yeah, so if it's amazing, we won't be doing it.
Okay.
So we'll be definitely doing it for when they need.
If it's amazing, you're fine, Brie. Go home and just
practice.
Go home
and have fun. We'll just tell you when to have fun.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's what we do as a step. However, IUI has not, it isn't the most successful thing, but it's a very simple thing. So it's like 15% chance. Up 12 to 15% chance each time you try it. That's about it. Because most of it is done when there's some male factor problem. Yeah.
How many times can you do IUI?
You can do it many times. Some women actually want to do it many times. However, after the third or fourth tried it, if you're not conceiving, then I won't pursue it anymore. Because it's obviously there's something else. Maybe the sperm says hi to the egg, but doesn't actually want to stick to the egg, then that's not a good thing to do. Yeah.
So the next thing after that
would be
IVF.
Yes, would be IVF, yeah. Where we actually make sure that the sperm actually makes it in.
Yes, okay.
But is that a long process for IVF?
Well, the process for IVF is, I mean, you take a month to conceive, so the first 2 weeks you're actually developing your eggs, and somewhere in mid-cycle it comes out. So what we do in IVF is the first 2 weeks where we help the woman produce many eggs, so that we can harvest many eggs in the middle of the cycle. Why we do that is because, as I said, you don't lose only one egg per cycle. You actually produce many eggs, but only one becomes the queen egg in a natural cycle. In the IVF cycle, we actually encourage the rest of it to come out as well, so we can harvest those as well.
Several queens.
And maybe one will become the queen of the queens.
Yes.
Yeah, when it finally turns back as an embryo.
Wow. And so I have friends who have just been through a lot and then failed IVF and then they get pregnant naturally.
Yes.
So why?
Well, yeah, because when everybody is trying very hard for the IVF or trying very hard to get pregnant and then go into IVF, a lot of them are super stressed. I think it's very hard to put a number on stress, but stress obviously does things to your body. You don't sleep so well. You don't eat so well, then obviously the quality is not so good and your whole system just isn't functioning so well. So I can tell you when I do an IVF cycle, I can tell when they don't sleep. The eggs start to grow, then they stop growing. That's what happened. I couldn't sleep the last 2 days. Then I give them something to calm them down a little bit, and next day, boom, the egg
grows.
Wow,
really?
It's amazing. So if we could help women to be a bit calmer, it would,
process,
I think, in the whole
process,
I think it would do wonders for fertility.
But IVF is not, what is the success rate of IVF?
Success rate depends on your age and the male factor. So it's very individual for couples, but of course you can see overall cycles. It would drop with age. So by the time we are in, and all the centers have their published IVF rates,
right.
Success rates, so you can actually check against your age group.
So you have several couples who come in and do IVF a few times? Do people not, they just keep going? I don't know.
I know. So what happens is we hope that we will have the woman come in and do a cycle and then have enough embryos so that they don't have to do a repeat cycle.
Okay.
That's the goal.
Okay.
So it's a one time, the goal is to one time get enough eggs, get enough sperms to make sure, and then
we have good embryos. So the idea is to have good embryos so that you have chances for having a family in that stimulation. Right. However, the caveat is that you have to have enough eggs in your own reserve
in the first place.
Yes, and of course a good quality. However, if you don't, then we'll have to do repeated cycles and figure out how to tweak things to improve the outcome.
Right. So by the time you get to IVF, you don't need to worry about the sperms being able to swim. You're just going to inject it anyway, right?
Yeah, but
so you just need to make sure there's good sperms.
Yeah, you still need to make the quality is good.
Quality is good. How do we get the quality is good?
Yeah, so that's where it gets more exciting, because we actually have to look at the sperm and blow up big pictures and actually see, oh no, we've got holes in the head. There's a lot of DNA that might be fragmented. Then they have a higher risk of not making pretty embryos. That's part of their problem. So now we can magnify the eggs as well and say, oh no, it's not dividing very well. The spindles inside are not in the correct position, the absent spindles. So they may be abnormal eggs, because again, we know that not all the eggs are normal. So at 35, 50% of the eggs are normal, only 50%. At 40, only 1 in 10 to 20 eggs are normal. So that's where the problem is. So we can see all these wonderful eggs, but we haven't got a clue exactly which of these eggs are normal. And when we form the embryos, we're not exactly sure which embryo is normal. Of course, the thinking is the prettier it is, the more well-developed it is, the less fragments there are inside, the higher chance it'll be healthy and normal. So by the time we get to day 5 with a healthy, normal, pretty looking blastocyst, then we're more comforted to think that, okay, we're more likely going to succeed with this one.
This is a bit of a sad question, but do you ever just see a couple and know that they're not going to be able to have a baby? And you have to give that news, what would you, I don't know, what advice would you give to them?
Well,
knowing that, that's a tough question.
Yes, we do have that. I have young women coming up to me who have premature menopause, and she hasn't had a period for 6 years. Because at age of 31, 32, she's is menopausal. So after 6 years, I can't find the egg anymore. Those who are getting into premature menopause where they have low reserves, they say, okay, we try and harvest the egg. And yes, I have one who just got married and she was thinking, why am I menses funny? I really want a kid. And she has really, really low reserves. So we tried the cycle. She didn't get pregnant. That was when she was very anxious. And then after that, she naturally conceived.
You know, when I was growing up, Bree, I don't know if you know this. So in the Asian community, right, when I was growing up, it's a couple who have been married for a long time, don't have kids, they decide to adopt. The minute they adopt, they get pregnant.
Yes.
I think that's the best of both worlds.
In the old folks' tale, in our society, is that okay, no kids, the old people would tell go adopt. The minute you adopt, you'll be pregnant. So is there any medical,
You're
distracted, you're not thinking about it. You have a kid already. You see?
It's hard to tell somebody to not be stressed
and to be calm. No, it's extremely difficult to tell anyone to be relaxed. And many times you have both partners who are a little bit different in their stress levels, and you have to handle the couple as well. So it's either him or her that's more stressed, and it's sometimes we have to help the couple relate as well.
Yes. Yeah. So you're also into couple counselling.
I know, we've got fantastic counsellors at our IVF centre, so that's good.
Yeah, rely on them to help. Should be. It's important, right?
I think everybody needs to chip in and help the couple.
So, especially going through that, it's good to have therapy or an advocate of therapy. go, counselling, therapy.
But also, Dr. Anne, you are the first to introduce the first trimester pregnancy screen.
That was way back then.
What does that mean?
That's the fetal medicine part, right? So when you conceive, all mothers want to know, is my baby normal? No right. brainer. Yeah. So at that point in time, we had the second trimester pregnancy screen where we did
pregnancy tests. So the first 3 months, no screening. No, you mean we don't get that little printout that you get every time you go see your
OB-GYN? Yes, you get a printout. Yes. But the first trimester pregnancy screen, which is still practiced now, is taking your bloods for your hormones, the beta HCG and Pap A, and anywhere from 10 to 12 weeks or even longer, and coupled that with a scan of the back of the neck, the length of the baby, and looking at the baby's nasal bone, present or not, combine all that together to churn out a risk score for the pregnancy. So that in itself is a pretty robust test, but because it's not genetics, it's your own hormones and the scan, it's a little bit more variable depending on how good, you must get a good cut of the baby on the scan, it must be very precise where you do the scan. So there's some variables. The sensitivity is a bit lower, so it's at 90%. Versus a newer test nowadays, which uses the free fetal DNA, which is the baby's DNA, floating in mummy's blood, which we can detect from very early on in the pregnancy.
Just in
to screen, yeah.
In your blood.
Yeah, so we just take mummy's blood and screen the pregnancy. So that's the NIPT screen, which...
Oh, yes.
So, I mean, that was then. That was way back then. So NIPT is only probably in the last 3-4 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think 4 years.
But now everyone does it.
Yeah, right? Now,
but even the scan, right? So I was putting together my baby books for my kids, right? And with number one, I mean, she's 24. So she was born in 1998. I couldn't find any of her scans. I only had 2 or 3.
Oh,
right, so and then number two came and she had
that's
a little
still
bit
a
more.
Lot, though. You know, two in the UK, three. You get like one scan only, and then that's it.
Yeah, and by the time I came to number three, and he was born in the year 2000, I have one for every visit. So I have a whole page full of it. And it's interesting, even number one said, well, where am I? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't remember. So I guess it developed over the years where you get, every time you go now, yeah. How many did you get?
Yeah, a lot. It's lovely.
Yeah, because before... And the quality of the scan machines have improved so much.
Yes, yes.
In the last, since I've been
a gynecologist,
right? They're really, really nice now. I mean, you look at how good your iPhone is. Think
yes.
How much better the resolution is. It's the same thing for ultrasound machines. So you can see more and more and more. So at the first trimester, we can already see the development of the brain, the heart, and everything. So it depends on what you get, what you see. Yeah.
So a lot of women get pregnant with their first easily, and their second pregnancy, you know, there's problems and they seem to not be able to get pregnant. Do you see this a lot, and why is this happening?
Well, I think if they conceived the first easily, it's depending on the gap they were having between the first and the second, and more commonly what was the age of the first pregnancy and where they are when they're trying for the second. So as I said, age really matters in conceiving. As the quality of the eggs will drop. And
right.
Sometimes when we're busy with the first, having a toddler in bed is a very good contraception. So that may be very distracting. And also it takes up a lot of your energy and you might not be looking after your health as well. So those are some contributing factors as to trying for number two. And a lot of the career women I see are getting higher and higher in their careers. And obviously everything is fighting for time.
Yes.
And unfortunately, pregnancies are very hard to order. I want it now.
Yeah. So Bria, Thea cannot sleep on the bed. She has to be in her own bed, not between the two of you.
No, I keep bringing her in at night. I can't help it. She's so cute. And it's so nice.
Yeah, well, so nice. Yeah.
I said I would never do this co-sleeping thing, and now I'm doing it, and I don't care.
Yeah, it's really nice feeling, right? Yeah. Nice little sausage there.
Yeah, it's so nice. Although we don't have sex, I won't get into my sex. We do have sex. He is not in the bed with us. I thought I was pregnant.
That'd be so weird.
Oh my gosh, it was so weird. but I thought I was pregnant, and I had to take a test.
Oh,
recently.
I am not. I'm not pregnant.
That's the other thing too, right? So you don't get your period, but you can still get pregnant, right? While you're breastfeeding.
Yeah, can you tell me more about
that? Yeah, can you tell us more about that? Because someone asked me yesterday, and I'm like, I've forgotten. I know that you don't have your period while you're still breastfeeding. Is that correct?
Yes, but you must remember that it comes out before the menses starts.
So you're still...
So you're actually starting to ovulate, and you didn't get your menses because you conceived on that ovulation, so you missed the menses already.
Oh, the first ovulation, yes, you conceived. Yes.
So you can actually go from pregnancy to pregnancy without having a period.
Oh dear.
And they go, huh, how come my menses not coming? I'm starting to feel a bit weird.
Oh my gosh.
But also I think with a lot of couples, once you have one child, probably you can correct me if I'm wrong, Brie, because my youngest is 20, so I don't remember much. But I think once you have your first child, you automatically assume that, yeah, I'm good.
Yes.
I can have babies.
Yes.
So then you think number two will just come along.
Naturally, yeah.
Right? And you don't think about it. And is there a situation where we wait so long that all of a sudden we have no more eggs or no more sperm or you know? But
yeah.
Then we have one
yeah.
child, so we just assume our bodies are okay.
Yeah, so that's why when I do the postnatal check, I also look at the ovary size, because I want to make sure, you know, we're going to have a good chance. I'll ask them, are you planning for another one? If sometimes I see that ovaries look particularly small, then I'll get, maybe you should check egg bank for you, and then you can have a think of how far you want the next
wait,
one to be.
Right.
So
checking your egg
up.
Bank, you just
do a blood test.
A blood test.
Blood test. I mean, you can also do it on a scan. But of course, when post-delivery, eggs could be a little bit suppressed, but sometimes ovaries are really small, and I see only one or two eggs, and going, this is a bit suspiciously little, let me check. And oftentimes, because I'm so used to it now, that I'm correct, that the egg bank is a little bit lower. So I'll prod them, maybe you shouldn't wait too long.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, that's great that you do that. Maybe I need to go see Dr. Tammy Kim, which is your aunt. We just spoke before and found this out, and I couldn't be more obsessed with your aunt, and I love her so much. So maybe I'll just go for a visit and see how I'm doing.
Yeah, you should.
Yeah, just a pre-pregnant, right?
Yes. So I know that this isn't about preparing to get pregnant, but I do love to talk about giving birth, and I want to talk about yours.
Okay.
So tell us.
Well, I've had three.
Three!
Amazing. What's the age gap?
4 and 3, because I went away on my scholarship
right.
between the first and second, so the second one also took a bit of time coming because I was away, and when I came back I had just had too much stuff to do, and I was doing a musical at the time, so I couldn't get pregnant, kind of a big round person jumping on stage, so the minute the musical ended,
the
hospital was having its 175th anniversary,
oh.
yeah.
and I was pulled into to the musical, so I went, okay.
I want to see that musical. I love musical theatre. Musical theatre
yeah,
is my favorite.
So they had one commission for SGH then.
Oh.
So it was quite fun.
So fun.
Yeah. So after it ended, then I got pregnant. Soon
so
after, immediately
problems.
Actually.
You, did you check yourself?
I never really tried. I never really very angst about it. And it all came.
So you were just... So even though you practice in...
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I don't really plan it.
Right.
Yeah. You must remember, my life is never that regular.
Yeah.
I have to run in and out of the hospital. It's all sorts of hours. Yeah, and that's why I think my kids are not wanting to be doctors and definitely not gynecologists.
So you never have a day off.
Yeah, something like that. Or a night off.
So I'm always curious, right? When you're a gynecologist, who delivers your baby? You can't deliver your own baby. Who do you trust to deliver your own baby, you know?
Yeah.
Well, my boss and my colleagues. All vagina deliveries. Yep.
Amazing.
Yep. So I had I said, no, there's no prizes for screaming in pain, so I had epidurals.
Epidural, yes,
yeah.
Me too.
Yes, and...
Did you feel what
I could feel everything, though.
Okay.
So the thing is... if you can tailor your epidural so
yes.
you can actually feel. I can actually feel
so
the baby
I,
descending.
Yeah.
I can.
Yeah, so
and
can
I. I have, you can imagine and feel. So I got a good imagery of what's happening in me, so I can tell.
But has that changed? Because I remember with my first one, there was this giant big needle attached to my back, so I couldn't lie down while I was... waiting for delivery.
No, there's no giant big needle.
There was something
there's
big.
There's a tube.
Well, tube.
There's only a tube.
No, the tube
there's,
is so small.
No,
there's
so
something
big. Wait. No, am I? Well,
there's
well,
no
well,
needle.
25 years ago. So let's talk 25 years because I remember. why couldn't I lie down then? Why couldn't I lie flat on my back? Because there was this thing at the back and I just had to keep on maybe on my side or something. No. And that was the epidural. I'm pretty sure that was the epidural.
But they won't have left a needle in you. They have left a tube that's coiled. Oh. But I'm not sure why they didn't want you to lie down.
Well, I couldn't because it was sticking out from my back.
No,
yeah, maybe they didn't plaster it as well for you, so it's uncomfortable.
I remember that was my first time, and so the epidural was very uncomfortable. But then by number two, though, it was quite interesting. I went to my gynae for my last visit, and I had just started my maternity leave, and I said to my mom, who came down to Singapore, because number one was born in Hong Kong, number two is in Singapore, and I said to my mom, just wait for me. I'm going to see my gynae one last checkup, and then, you know, I'll go shopping with you because I start my maternity leave. I wanted to take maternity leave 2 weeks before because I wanted to spend time with number one. And I walked in, and my gynae says, "You're 5 cm dilated."
I'm like, "Sorry, go into labor right now."
Yes. And then he's like, "Let's just walk over now, and I'll give you epidural, and you have a pain-free delivery, right?" And I call my husband. And he's like, "If you're 5 cm dilated, let's not have epidural, right? Let's just go for natural birth, like feel it off."
That's funny. That's sweet of you to say.
No. And then I'm like, so I looked at my gynae, and he was sitting right there, and he's like, "No, don't be an idiot." He's like, "Pain-free, Sharon." I'm like, "Yeah, pain-free." and then I don't remember the epidural, actually, for number two and number three. But I remember with number one, I came out very cold. But I know I couldn't lie down. So I keep wanting to revisit
They might have had some difficulty getting in.
So they left the first something. I don't know.
And also the length of labor was much longer for number one.
Oh my goodness, 18 hours.
Exactly, that's why you have a backache.
Wow. Well,
18 but number hours, two was number, very fast, yeah, right?
We were literally...
Yes. In and out, right?
yes. That's why I could have number three.
Yes. Because it erased away the bad memories of number one. I just was telling them that I had a very difficult epidural for number one. And I'm not the biggest, roundest person. But it took them almost 2 hours to get epidural in. And 2 hours later, my baby came out. Because after all, in 2 hours, I was 5 cm. But of that, in 2 hours later, she was full.
Wow. Do you think the epidural, it actually speeds things up because your body is more relaxed for a baby to come?
In some women, it does. I have many women who are very tense and in pain. And they are trying to
grit
and hold the pain. Yeah. So I think the muscles are really tensed.
Yes.
The minute the epidural is in, the whole pelvis is relaxed and hit.
Because when I had my epidural, it happened quite fast, actually.
Yeah, but that doesn't happen to everyone. So I give them the option when it's not moving very well and they want to try naturally, to try and have some pain relief just to relax. And sometimes with relaxation, it works wonderfully.
Wow.
And if it doesn't, obviously there might be other reasons. Yeah.
I did ask for the epidural. I did want to feel, and I just felt a lot.
Yes, it painful? The last one I decided to... Okay, let me try and feel something. I went, I dialed it down too fast.
It was, the final pushes, I won't forget that.
It was amazing,
but also I remember saying to Sarah, I was like, "I can't, please just give me a break. Please let me break." She's like, "Well, your baby, you got one more push and she'll be here."
Okay, it's amazing, right?
Okay, but it was war. I won't forget last one.
We forget.
Yeah, everybody forgets.
Yes. That's why it's so, we want to talk about it, but then we all just have good memories because you forget.
Yeah.
The oneness of the baby crying in your arms.
So we have to catch moms who just delivered, like literally.
Yes.
As they're going through.
No, they'll tell you it's okay. It was just a very short moment.
It was beautiful.
Right? Yeah.
It definitely was not that.
Yeah. So that's why they forget so nicely.
Before we go, Dr. Anne, what is one piece of advice you would share with all mums?
I think prepare to be blessed with a kid. Look after yourself. Take all the prenatal supplements that you should take to ensure that your health is best. And make sure you look after your husband as well so that he takes all the care to make his sperms also good. And good luck. Relax. And check out with your doctor if you are not having any success.
And what is the legacy you'd like to leave your children?
Well, the legacy I'd like to leave with them is to encourage them to be parents one day. Because I believe that having a child of your own is the best way to learn how to love others and love yourself too. Thank you.
I love that. Thank you so much. I really, really, honestly love talking to you. I love the way that you can just... I suppose simplify.
Yes. Yes.
What you do, and you're so calm, and I feel like with finding someone to go through this journey with, and finding the right doctor is something so important. and I feel like you have,
It's a personal thing. Having someone look after your kid, it's a very personal thing.
Yeah.
And you know, Dr. Anne says, the greatest pleasure is to have patients achieve their dream of having babies.
Yeah.
That's a tagline.
Yes, that's my tagline, because that's what I really believe. That's my mission statement. Yes. So it starts from beginning to the end.
And it's our beautiful tagline, Bree, is...
Be the mother you want to be.
Ah. Okay, so I'll pass them to you.
But really, thank you so much. It's such a pleasure talking to you.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Dr. Anne, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
That was such a great chat. I love Dr. Tan.
Another great episode.
And I just want to say the cherry on top was finding out after we had our interview, I was talking about my doctor, Dr. Tan Wee Kin, and that is her aunt. And it made me so happy because if you guys follow me on Instagram, you'll know how much I love my doctor. And I go and visit her just to say hello.
What a coincidence.
I know.
It's such a small world.
It's such a small world. In Singapore, I feel is even smaller. But I'm so happy with that. Anyways, guys, we hope you loved the episode. Talking all things IUI, IVF.
Yes.
We learned a lot.
Little sperms that swim faster or slower. Yeah. And making more basket of eggs.
Yeah, and remember that it is 50-50. Yes. I feel like it's always... Yeah, talking about the women. Hello. Takes two. So, if you guys are enjoying our podcast, we would love for you guys to like, subscribe, review, all of that jazz, because it reaches more mummies, and that's why we're doing this.
Yeah, because we want to journey together with a lot of mums.
Yeah. And if you guys want to follow us on Instagram, my personal is at Bree Benfell.
And mine is SW Wong Sharon.
And we also have at Making of Motherhood. So please give us a DM if you have anything you want us to talk about.
Or you want to share.
Yeah, just let us know. And I hope you tune in for our next episode.
Yay, see you next week.
Bye.